today's episode, we are going to discuss colorism and its effect on the Black community and the effect of anti-Blackness within the Black community. So, without further ado, let's go ahead and jump into the episode. No rules, what to do if you die of smoking, if you don't smoke, meditate, drink some coffee, take a few shots, do whatever you gotta do to get into the mood. Black community. So without further ado, let's go ahead and jump into the episode. No rules. Take a couple shots, meditate, drink coffee, whatever you gotta do to get into the right frame of mind. Just listen to me rant about bullshit. How do we work together to dismantle colorism? Houston Forbes came up with 9 solutions on how to do just that. The following are the 9 solutions that Houston Forbes came up with for us to work on dismantling colorism. The first one is self. Do you show preference? Do you assign hierarchy to skin tone? So you need to work on your own self-hate. Be mindful of your reaction when working on your own self-hate. Take pride in the people that look like you, and take pride in the people that don't look like you. Mourn with which you have been treated, and acknowledge the privilege that you have based on the way that you look. Number 2, family, infant, and colorist language. Do not make comments on your infant's hair texture. From comments like, I hope their hair isn't nappy, or I hope you get your mother's straight hair. Do not make comments about your infant's nose, because a large nose is often seen to be quote unquote too African. There have been studies that have shown mothers pinching the bridge of their baby's nose in order to make it smaller. Do not do this. It is a well ingrained belief that the ears, knuckles, and knees are the areas that are strong indicators of how dark your child will turn out. Please do not make comments on whether or not your child is going to be too dark or not dark enough. Do not make comments like, I hope he doesn't get too dark. Number 3, family and colorist language. We can actively check the members of our family for their use of colorist language. You can say things like, my sister is beautiful just the way she is. Saying she is pretty for a dark-skinned girl is extremely hurtful. Hair is great hair. Texture is normal. Please, white, Latin, and Asian parents, do not lose your composure when it comes to doing your child's hair. If you are completely lost on what to do, the internet is a perfect place to start. you can watch tutorials, you can watch so many YouTube videos on how to take care of your child's hair. Please do the research. Please look into how to properly take care of your child's hair, and do not throw your hands up in the air, frustrated and ready to throw in the towel, because you have no idea what to do with your child's hair. Number four, men. Black men have no idea how painful it is to men and women when they stand in a room and make it obvious that their choices are based on colorism. One, acknowledge your privilege in this area, because men carry the bulk of power in maintaining colorism inside of our community. No matter how many times women are clapped back, black women who want a black man as a lover, life partner, or a husband need to be considered desirable by the men in their culture. The rejection by men because of the women's hue is so painful. While it is not fair that colorism has been handed down to men, as a contribution towards dismantling it will go a long way, especially for generations to come. Avoidance of a woman for the certain of how the children will come out is a key to avoidance of a woman for the certain of how the children will come out is due to eugenics. 5. Church. If possible, ask the pastor if he can lead these solutions to your congregation. The majority of people in your congregation are going to be full of colorist ideas, and these would be great things to bring up to them. Number 6, young children. Try your best to control the type of television that your young children watch so that they do not internalize colorist messages. Small children are way more impacted by pictures than our words, and images on TV perpetuate so powerfully to the point that black children continue to view a white person's image as superior to images of black people. Many studies have been done where both black and white children have been given dolls and shown pictures, and it is not far-fetched. And as a result of those tests, actually, it was shown that majority of the kids were favorable to white dolls and the characteristics that came along with the white dolls. So it is important to control deeply what your children watch at young ages, but it is important to make sure that your young child is also watching shows or getting imagery that also depicts characters that look more like your child, so that they understand that there is no hierarchy to skin tone. Number 7, children. We need to teach our young boys that they should not ever assign a girl's value based on color hierarchy. We need to teach our young boys that there is no need to find a girl more desirable because of their skin tone. We need to teach our young girls to not make fun of dark-skinned boys, because we owe it to our generation to make sure that their futures are not clouded in colorist ideas, beliefs, or practices. We need to teach our boys and girls about colorism, the definition of colorism, and how not to use colorist language. Rich Black Hollywood and Atlanta. They have the power and the money to produce films and cast any way they wish. They have the ability to give roles to Black actresses and actors. They have the ability to give these actors roles that are other than the stereotypical roles of a Black individual. It is time to let them know that there is no need to pander and beg for casting or for EGOT awards. There is no need to pander and beg to produce or to lead. Mr. Ray has already demonstrated that content is key no matter the media. And number 9, employment. Employment law is indeed on the side of stamping out colorism. It can't be denied that lawsuits are correction and number 9, employment. Employment law is indeed on the side of stamping out colorism. Can't be denied that lawsuits are correcting colorism in the workplace. Nothing can put corporate America in its place more than a lawsuit. It's well known that companies actually have to abide by protected class laws and protect Black people from discrimination experienced in the workplace, not only from white people, but from also Black people. There have been multiple same race lawsuits in the workplace. And this is something that is very easily seen. This is not something that is well known when it comes to employment laws. Especially when it comes to equal rights and stuff like that. This is something that is very real, and it is something that is very problematic in the workspace. Susan Forbes also says that, in short, radical protest calling out the perpetrators of colorism is necessary. We may lose friendship, but it will be worth it in subsequent generations to not be raised with cruel repulsion and to heal. We need to do this in order to better our communities and ourselves. While this is a very, very tough subject to constantly be having to talk about, this is something that I find extremely passionate, and this is something that I find extremely important that needs to be talked about. Are changes that need to be made, and these are changes that are not going to be made overnight. These are changes that constantly need to be talked about. These are things that constantly need to be talked about, so that talking about them normalizes them. So that talking about them makes it easier to talk about them. So that talking about them makes people want to make changes. I'm fully prepared to lose friendships along this road, along this journey, because at the end of the day, it is not about friendships. It is not about me calling people and making people feel good or anything. anything like that. It's about me educating the people that are around me, educating those that are in my life. And I do understand that not everybody wants to be educated. Not everybody feels the need to be educated or that there's anything they need to be educated on. And all I have to say about that is congratulations, good for you. I'm not here for you. I'm not here to change anybody's views or change the way people think about things, but I hope that when people listen to my podcast or when people listen to or read the posts that I make, that they would want to actually hear the messages that I'm trying to get across, and that they do not take anything I say to be personal, because it is never a personal attack. I'm just here to educate people. I'm here to spread awareness about things that need awareness spread about them, and I am here to do my best to spread the correct information that needs to be spread. With that being said, if I have ever said anything that offends you, I do really apologize for offending you or for saying something that you do not agree with. You have every right to disagree with anything that I say. But at the same time, I hope to God that everybody hears the things that I say and does not take the things that I say as attacks on anybody, because that is not the case. Like I said, I am here to educate people, and I do know that not everybody wants to be educated, or not everybody feels the need to be educated. And all I can say is I hope that you take something away from the things I say. Other than that, I hope that this shed the light for something, for someone. If there was anything that I left out in this podcast episode, please feel free to message me, leave a voice memo on this, shoot me some comments or anything like that, and I will gladly do a part two for this. I'm going to end this episode. I hope everybody has a wonderful day, and I am so glad you've had another wonderful, wonderful, beautiful Black History Month. I hope everybody else had a fantastic Black History Month. I hope that next year, during Black History Month, we could have a lot more podcasts that are revolved around Black history and Black culture and stuff like that. I hope that maybe next year we could have a guest speaker on to talk about something involving Black history. But with that being said, I am going to end today's episode here. I hope everybody has a fantastic day. I hope everybody stays safe. Always practice your rock. And have a fantastic time. I hope everybody has a wonderful day. I'll catch you guys next time. Bye-bye. Racism, we all know that it is very real, it's very real, the lies here, you know, it's not as bad as what our ancestors went through, you know, so it's not as in our face, and it's not as blatant, and it's not as cutthroat as it was. Like, we do not work, and we don't have to work in fields or anything like that. We're not being forced to work for the bare minimum. You know, we have a lot more opportunities in this country than a lot of our grandparents or parents had, depending on who you are that's listening to this. Excuse me, even though, you know, we don't have to deal with those same things, we don't have to carry the burdens of our past, you know, those are still things that make us who we are. And colorism and shadism are definitely problems that are not just here in the U.S. These are problems that are in Latin America and in East and Southeast Asian, Caribbean, Africa. These are real world problems that are not just here in America. These are not just problems that Black Americans have to face. These are problems that these are problems that Black people in general have to deal with, no matter where it is in the world they are. Whether it's somewhere that you're just traveling to visit, or if it's somewhere that you live, you are all having to deal with issues within your own community. Not only are you having to deal with racism, but you will have to deal with racism within your own community. Outside of the U.S., you know, colorism is more from a class perspective and a white supremacy type thing. You know, white skin was seen as superior due to it being part of a ruling class at the time and having lighter complexions and stuff like that. Peasants were poor, working classes and stuff like that developed tans because they were working outside, and because of this, having a lighter skin, that you were able to achieve better employment opportunities, while, you know, your darker counterparts were not able to have those same opportunities. But in order for us to figure out how we are going to fight colorism and what we are going to do as a whole and as a collective, how are we going to fight against colorism? We need to define what it is. We need to get to its origins. We need to discuss its history, where it began, and we need to sit down and discuss all of this. We need to discuss where it came from, where it began, where it started, where it stemmed from, and figure out the steps that we need to take in order to move farther past this. How do we grow as not only as an American society, but as a world and as a Black community? How do we grow and become better? So, for starters, colorism has been around since the early 1990s. Colorism has been around since as early as 1990s. For starters, colorism has been around as early as 1990s. Back then, it was more commonly referred to as color phobia, or quote unquote Negro phobia. It wasn't until Alice Walker, an American novelist, short story writer, poet, social activist, and she's best known for writing The Color Purple. Alice Walker was credited for being the very first person to use the word colorism. And Alice Walker defined colorism as the prejudicial or preferential treatment of the same race of people based solely on their skin tone. So what that means is you're automatically giving preferential treatment to someone of the same race as you based solely upon their skin tone. There is no denying that when it comes to colorism, that it originates as lighter skins being more favorable than darker skins. You know, when it comes to colorism, especially during times of slavery, you know, white skin, slaves were privileged and extremely privileged in the fact that they got to work doing, you know, domestic tasks and stuff like that. While dark-skinned slaves worked in the field, you know, lighter-skinned children were not even acknowledged as offspring of slave owners which still led to them being treated better, which led to, you know, them being treated, they were still treated better than darker skin slaves, but they still were not acknowledged for being a part of the family that they were, you know, pretty much born into. But then again, this also meant that having light skin was considered to be an asset in the Black community. You were more sought after if you had lighter skin. Around the 19th, 20th century, this is when the quote-unquote paper bag test was introduced, you know, in order to see if you were permitted into social clubs. You know, for those who were to be considered quote-unquote free slaves. The test was implemented by taking a brown paper bag and placing it up against your skin. And if you were the same color as the bag or lighter, you were granted access. And you were granted access to these social clubs and stuff like that, and you were considered able to be hired for jobs because you have a lighter complexion. And, you know, if you were darker than the paper bag, then you were not granted access and you were looked over for jobs. Colorism also stems from the fact that Black slaves were not allowed to be educated. This led to Black individuals believing that having an education was anti-Black. So many believed that schools and Black people do not go together. Meaning, if you were educated and you were Black, or you were Black and you tried to do anything to have a higher level of education than you tried to read or you tried to learn or something, that you were teased and mocked or quote unquote acting white because you were viewed as thinking you were better than your peers. You know, kids were sought out and asked to spell certain words or asked mouth questions and stuff like that, and if they answered correctly, then they were beaten up. You know, gifted Black kids had to choose between whether or not they were going to be accepted by their peers or if they were going to, you know, strive to be smarter and strive to be better for themselves. And the majority of them chose to be accepted. You know, who wouldn't want to be a part of everybody else? You know, you're not going to want to stick out, especially at a time when the world is so already against you. You don't want to now turn the only people who are on your side against you even more. So this is thought to be the reason why so many kids did not do well in school, and why so many kids nowadays do not do well in school, because having an education is thought to be somehow negative, or wanting to be smarter or be a little bit better for yourself is somehow thought of as something that is extremely negative or down-putting to others that are around you, and very down-putting to your peers and to your friends. All of this, the Black community also struggles with internalized racism. Internalized racism or internalized oppression is a conscious or unconscious racial hierarchy in which whites are constantly ranked above people of color. This can also be shown by having beliefs in race stereotypes or adaptations to, you know, white cultural standards and thinking that supports the status quo, or, you know, basically denying that racism is something that exists. Most of this internalized racism, black women are more commonly dark skinned. Black women are seen as incapable of processing information or thinking or succeeding independently, or are unintelligent or undesirable or not beautiful, need to be dominated, or, you know, quote unquote, tamed and stuff like that, and are constantly talked down upon and insulted. And because of this, light skin became greatly desired. Light skin was so coveted that skin lightening creams were some of the best selling products in the US, Asia, and many other places. Like, can you imagine being told at a young age that your dark, and not even dark, not your dark skin, but just being told that your skin is not beautiful. You are not desirable just because of the color of your skin. And this is ingraining you so much. When you have been given chemicals to place onto your skin so that you can lighten it. Girls in Louisiana were told, you are too white to be black, and you're too black to be white. We're all aware that racial features play power roles when it comes to getting ahead in the world, and who doesn't get ahead in the world? These factors determine who gets hired, who gets convicted, who gets elected. We still cannot separate these very painful stereotypes of colorism from misogyny, mostly because of the fundamental fact that light-skinned black heritage in the U.S. stems from the practice of sexual slavery, sexual abuse, and sexual exploitation in American slavery, because so many slave owners were having offspring that were still considered slaves. Let's break this down. So not only are we all that being said, there's another aspect of colorism that we still need to face, because too many in the black community either think that it is not a thing or do not wish to believe that this is a real problem and that it's easier. It's not easier, but it's easy for black erasure of light skin to happen. You know, Creoles in Louisiana were told that you are too white to be black and you're too black to be white. We're all very aware that racial features play a huge, 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 huge role in who gets ahead in this country and who does not. It plays a huge factor in who gets hired, who gets convicted, and who gets elected. And we still cannot separate all of these very, very painful stereotypes of colorism from misogyny, mostly because of the fact that light-skinned blacks' heritage in the U.S. stems from the practice of sexual slavery, sexual abuse, and sexual exploitation in American slavery. And because of this, so many slave owners were having offspring. They were having children with slaves. This implemented the one-drop rule. The one-drop rule stated that even if one of your distant ancestors or your distant relatives was black, then you were considered to be black or very, very not white. So even if you had one teeny tiny little drop of black in you, you were not considered white. There are also tends to be this notion that light skin black is somehow not black, but at the same time, they're not white. I've been told many times that I have to refer to myself as mixed. I'm not allowed to refer to myself as white. I'm not allowed to refer to myself as black and mixed. I'm not allowed to identify as black, and that I have to identify as biracial. I am biracial, you know, meaning I'm composed of two different races. I am black and I am white. I'm both, you know, and at the same time, I'm neither, you know, because I'm not fully black and I'm not fully white. I'm both of them at the same time, and at the same time, I am neither, you know, because there is not enough me to fit in with white community, and it's not enough for me to fit in with the black community. But regardless of that, when the world sees me and they look at me, they see that I am black. When it comes to mixed black individuals, we are looked down on by those that don't suffer from the same plight as us. They don't understand the harsh situation because they suffer differently than us. There seems to be this century long competition contest to see who will win, you know, I say a lot, the most oppressive Olympics, and it's disheartening to see that after all of these years, we as a community cannot work to dismantle this internalized racism. When it comes to the anti-blackness in the black community, these were things that were not in our own control to deal with. When it comes to the anti-blackness in this community, in our community, it stems from being treated and told that we are less than how we feel and how we are. We are less than the very being that we are. Our skin is not beautiful to the point where people have had to put dangerous bleaching chemicals onto their skin. Many, many, many who suffered from burns, third-degree burns on their scalp in order to have straightened hair. People who had third-degree burns on their skin in order to have lighter skin. Being told that the only way that we are able to fit in and be a part of society is if we adapt these Eurocentric beauty standards. We have to put relaxers in our hair so that our curls and our quote-unquote nappy afros are tame and easy to manage and control, and they lay down flat. We have been told for such a long time that our skin is undesirable to the point where people are putting burning chemicals on their skin in order to fit in and look a certain type of way. So what do we do? How are we going to dismantle this? How are we going to change? How are we going to, as a community and a society, how are we going to...